Peace, everyone. Tamarack Garlow here, and this is The Diamond Path, a weekly show where we examine different aspects of life and put it through the lens of Buddhism, see what Buddhism has to say about it. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. A little belated, a couple weeks late. But a new year it is. It's changed from one year to the other. A lot of change going on in the country, in Iraq, in the timing of the holidays and the disruption of our normal life and the way of doing things. And now that we've passed the new year, we all kind of take a deep breath and start looking forward to the next. So what we're going to talk about today is change. Change, as we see it from one year to the next, it's pretty arbitrary. We've set this date of January 1st as a new year, but it's really not based on too much. But once we decide that there's a certain date on something and make that and give it import, then it actually accumulates import, and anything we put up around it then is based on it. It's like someone who doesn't know their birthday. They were an orphan or something, so they choose a certain day. Well, that probably wasn't their birthday. Odds are it wasn't, but it is now. So every aspect of birthdays for that person is now this arbitrary day. So that's how we look at the year. It's arbitrary, but then it's not. We do tend to take this change in, and we recognize it. So did you make a lot of resolutions? New year, new directions. It's a time that we reflect on the old patterns that we've been following for so long and thinking about changing them. If they're bad patterns, we think in terms of turning that around, making them a little more positive, perhaps getting rid of old addictions and prejudices. And then if we have other things to deal with in our life, maybe it's just starting brand new directions. You know, we dropping away old things that we don't want, taking in new stuff that we do want. So in that case, we look at change as kind of a nifty thing. We can change things for the better. That's generally what the resolutions are. But what about change in general? What about change in our life? The Buddhists have a big word for it. It's called impermanence, but we'll just stick with the word change tonight. It's call a spade, right? So do we really have a handle on the implications of change? And when I say change in this respect, let's look at our lives in a broader context. We've been who we are for, obviously, ever since we were born. And as we get older especially, we tend to get a little set in our ways, a little settled, which is not a bad thing. The settling isn't. We often find peace and contentment with consistency and counting on days to be sort of like we want them to be or hope they're going to turn out. But what if change comes into this picture? And when I say change, let's pick a few things out. Let's say financial change. We've been doing fine, making X amount of money, never seems to be enough, but it's okay, we plod along. But then the financial rug is pulled out from under us, and all of a sudden, that change has now caused us some discomfort. Now, that's a change we don't want to see, but it happened. Another type of change would be health. If you're basically a physically healthy person, we want to stay that way. We don't want to get sick. Health is a thing that we don't want to change. And when it does come to us, it can be a very shattering thing. There's this such an interesting story. For example, Baba Ram Das, most of you know who Baba Ram Das is, from the 60s and 70s, a psychedelic guru who finally dropped all the drugs and became quite the spiritual teacher. But he had a major stroke a few years back, wound up writing a book about it, and there was a movie called Fierce Grace. And here's a man that would have been a spiritual teacher to millions for so many years, but when this stroke hit him, he was so thrown by the change, he couldn't even bring his spiritual practice to bear. For a day or two or three, I forget how long he said it was, after the stroke, he hardly had a spiritual thought. There was no centering going on. His entire world was disrupted because of this change. So if a change to our body can be a very big blow. You're going along fine, and all of a sudden, the you is not the you used to be. And things can fall apart. Mental change, I think that's even scarier for most people than physical change. What if we got Alzheimer's? What if we had a stroke that left us with the inability to think as clearly as we used to? These are changes we don't want. Change in the family. Someone moves away, someone dies, and then ultimately, of course, the big change, death for you, for oneself. That's certainly a change that we don't embrace in any way, shape, or form. But these are changes that are happening all the time. Or if your life, like I said, has been, like mine, fairly consistent over a decent number of years, you know, ups and downs, but no real big earth-shaking change. When those things can happen, and they do happen, life just, we just start going in circles sometimes, and we just don't quite understand how this self that we have so much love for can be jarred in such a bad way. So how is one supposed to relate to changes? If we're thinking in terms of the change that I was just speaking about, a change that perhaps is not welcomed. In fact, let's talk about that. Welcome changes or welcome changes? We're talking about unwelcome changes. Certain consistency is something that we've counted on. And when that becomes disturbed, our whole psyche can suffer. We get fearful. We get upset. Like Baba Ram Das, we even drop our spirituality, which is there to buoy ourselves up at times like this. So how is one supposed to relate to changes like that? We all get them. They hurt. Sometimes they hurt an awful lot. So how do we deal with these? What do we do? Well, first we need to recognize its inevitability. Buddha taught early on that impermanence or change is one of the three marks or the three characteristics of existence. Impermanence, that things come into being, they exist for a while, and they go out of being based on the causes and conditions that supported it. That's one of the three marks of existence. The other is dukkha, or suffering, or the unsatisfying nature of existence. That's the second mark of existence. And the third is non-self, the emptiness that I've mentioned a few times about the constituents that rise and then give life to the next phase, which may be another object, person, place, thing, could be a thought. In other words, elements come together and create something. That something reaches a certain stasis for a little while, but then begins to decay. Because once something is created, it continually evolves. So it passes away ultimately. Everything created by the constituents rising and elements coming together eventually falls apart when those constituents are no longer there to support it. So non-self, one of the three marks of existence, speaks of this. Now, Buddha had taught these three marks of existence, impermanence, dukkha, or the unsatisfactoriness of nature, of our nature, and then non-self. Now, Buddha taught these things, and as a teacher, we listen, and we take the information that we get, and we have some faith in it as we study it. But we can't look at these things and say, yeah, these are true because Buddha said these are true. When we take any spiritual teaching in Buddhism, these are guideposts, these are guidelines. The only way we'll ever understand the truth of what Buddha said is to find it out for ourselves. The whole Buddhist path is about that. All the good words and all the good books and all the intellectual understanding of these things is good to a point. But until we kind of become one with that thought, we're no longer intellectualizing it and logically assuming its truth or its nature. We need to find from within, understand these things on a much deeper level. That's what Buddha asked us to do. Don't follow my words. They're just words. They're good words. They're just words. They mean nothing to you until you figure them out for yourself. So impermanence is something that we need to understand at a very basic level from inside us, deep inside us, and then find a way, once we've recognized this, to kind of come to terms with it. A major point when considering change is what's being changed. Our lives, us. We're the thing that's being changed. But who are we? If we, as we change, our changing happens every moment of our lives. Our bodies are changing continually as cells are changing, dropping off, dying, and new ones are being created. We change by the elements that we bring into our body, by our breath and our food. And our emotions change by the moment, can change by the moment, by our interpretation of things coming in from the environment. So we are change personified. We are constantly changing as individuals. So why shouldn't life change around us? Why shouldn't our situations change? So if we can recognize that we are these constantly changing thing, that from one moment to the next, we're not quite the person we were before, then what is this self? If we're always changing, if there's really no essence of ours that is immutable, that we're always changing, who are we? Who is this self? Well, that's one of the basic understandings about the self, is that it doesn't exist. Of course, it exists in the way that we provisionally accept it. We know we have a self. We know we have a body. We know we have a mind. Our individuality is unique. There's never been another person like us in the history of the world. And yet, why are we this way? Why are we unique? Is it some choice that we have made? Is it simply DNA that has made us who we are? Well, as I mentioned, it's constantly changing. Life is in flux. The person that we were 2 weeks ago is not the person we are today, both physically and mentally and emotionally. Of course, there's things that continue through. We have personalities, which also change. But if I said I liked so-and-so, that's because the personality that so-and-so has expressed was something that I kind of find a consistency to. I like that personality. And yet that personality is ever-changing. And sometimes, because of changes from without, that personality can change drastically. Some life-altering situation could make that person change completely. So if we embrace change, at least intellectually, to get started, we accept it. Yes, life is impermanent. Nothing's going to stay the same. I am going to get older. I may, at some point, get sick. I may, at some point, die. Well, there's no maybe about that, is there? But I may die younger. I may be crippled younger. All of these things are potential. They're all part of change. Our acceptance of that inevitability is not easy. It's not easy to accept the fact that everything we consider about ourselves that's important will not be here forever. And in the scheme of things, time frames and all, not here very long at all. And the reason that we fear this change so much is that we are so attached to this self. Even though we may intellectually recognize this change that's going on all the time, it's still an uncomfortable feeling to think this is not going to be this way all the time. We tend to push those thoughts aside, especially in times of plenty or times of things remaining consistently good for a long time, we get used to it. And that's when change becomes a rather scary proposition. So change can be to our advantage or it can be to our disadvantage, but it is inevitable. So when in this inevitability, we see this self, we try to understand that this self itself is change. The self morphs and falls apart at death. New beings come into play and they get old and they die. And this thing that we consider ours that gets old and dies, we become so attached to that. It's hard not to. It's the only thing we really know. We're looking at the world from inside this being. This is our vehicle for understanding virtually everything. So we obviously get very attached to it. But finding a way to drop that attachment and to lessen the fear of change is part of our practice. When we sit in meditation, when we do contemplations, and I say we being Buddhists, many of the contemplations have to do with dropping this notion of self, dropping the attachment to self. The notion of self, fine. It's that provisional self that we talked about. It is who we are. But in the grand expression, the self does not exist that way. It's like a wave on an ocean comes into being and passes on. There's a sutra that we chant every week in our service. It's called the Heart Sutra. I may have mentioned it before. Its main point is addressing this whole concept of non-self or the non-essence of things. This concept of emptiness, which is a word that a lot of people don't like the sound of. It seems to say that there's really nothing there. Emptiness can be looked at as a vast field of potential. And out of this field of potential, due to causes and conditions, phenomena occurs. One of these many phenomena is us. Us as individuals. And yet, it's an empty phenomenon because it's not an essence that lives and survives in and of itself. It is supported by conditions. You could almost look at it like the top of a roiling sea with all the waves coming up and down, disappearing and appearing. That's the kind of properties that we have in an ultimate sense. In a relative sense, we seem stable. In an ultimate sense, we're just part of those roiling waves on the open sea, appearing and disappearing. How attached can we be to one wave in a vision like that? We can see it, we can recognize it, but in an instant it folds back into the main. It's empty. It's empty of its own essence. It's part of this whole thing, which for lack of a better term is like this field, which is all there is, the ocean. And out of this forms come, and then those forms fold back into it. Emptiness is not an easy subject to think about or to explain. Emptiness in its essential nature, the understanding of emptiness in its essential nature is basically synonymous with enlightenment. If one can really grasp how we fit into this scheme, truly understand at a deep level this folding and infolding, unfolding and folding out of this essence that that's pretty much the key to enlightenment. That's the key to awakening. Not the key. That's one of the revelations that comes. Oh, that's a bad word. Excuse me. But it's the true understanding of the nature of reality, which is emptiness. And to understand the true nature of reality, truly understand that, suggests that we have become enlightened. I'd like to read part of this Heart Sutra, which speaks of emptiness. And it does it in a poetic form. And this is an ancient sutra, coming at least a couple thousand years old. There's a beginning and an end. I'm taking kind of the center part out of it. But the Heart Sutra. Form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness, no other than form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness, exactly form. Sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness are likewise like this. All dharmas or truths are forms of emptiness. So even the truths, even Buddhist truths, are actually forms of emptiness. They're not born, not destroyed, not stained, not pure. They're without loss, they're without gain. So in emptiness, there is no form, no sensation, conception, discrimination, or awareness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. No color, sound, smell, taste, touch, phenomena. No realm of sight, no realm of consciousness. No ignorance, and no end of ignorance. No old age and death, no end to old age and death. No suffering, no cause of suffering, no extinguishing, no path, no wisdom, and no gain. And with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear. These are the things that, these are the kinds of practices that will help eliminate fear, not only of change, just about every other form that fear can take. If we lose that sense of attachment to self, not let the stain of ego and grasping hold you down to this unchangeable, hopefully unchangeable self, if we can drop that attachment, drop that hindrance, that hindrance in the mind, then fear drops. This coming Monday, you may be listening to this on Monday. I just want a little service announcement here. There's a Martin Luther King celebration at the Congregational Church. That's the one next to Bank North, between noon and 1. It's an interfaith service. It's Monday, January 15th, in celebration of Martin Luther King on his birthday, happens to fall on his birthday this year. And I'm hoping to see you there. I'll probably be there myself. And until the next time, this is Tamarack Garlow. And if you want to hear Tamarack Garlow, this is The Diamond Path. And if you'd like to hear some of the archive editions of this show, you can reach us at diamondpath.blogspot.com on the internet and pick up some of the older talks. And this little radio program is a co-production of Higashi Tendai Buddhist Sangha in Great Barrington and the Housatonic Radio Works with Andy Potter. So until next week, peace, everyone.